From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, while Washington waits to see if Dr. Christine Blasey Ford will testify, President Trump is celebrating yet another round of positive economic numbers. FRC's Ken Blackwell joins me in just a moment. And the Family Research Council and United in Purpose hosted a strategic summit with conservative leaders from across the U.S. at the White House today on religious persecution. Vice President Mike Pence joined us, as did National Security Advisor John Bolton. Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council, joins me in just a moment with more details. Also, Ambassador Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, was at the summit, having just returned from an overseas trip. He'll be here later, as will Bob Fu with China Aid, another participant in today's gathering at the White House, sounding the alarm on the increasing hostility and persecution of Christians at the hands of the Chinese. We'll also take your phone calls on this Thursday afternoon a little later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com, and tomorrow is the day. That's right. Tomorrow morning, the Values Voter Summit kicks off, so it's unlikely, unless you're driving, you're not going to make it in time if you're coming from across the country. But don't worry. You can still participate. You can watch online. That's right. You can watch online. Go to TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over, and you can see everything beginning tomorrow morning as the 13th Annual Values Voter Summit kicks off. All right, a lot of controversy. You know, the back and forth between the Republicans and Democrats. Senator Grassley, as we talked about yesterday, extended invitation to Dr. Ford to testify on Monday. To bring her allegations about Brett Kavanaugh to the committee. The president late yesterday commented on the process. Here's what the president had to say.
I would let the senators take their course. Let the senators do it. They're doing a very good job. They've given tremendous amounts of time. They've already postponed a major hearing. And really, they're hurting somebody's life very badly. And it's very unfair, I think, to, as you know, Justice Kavanaugh has been treated very, very tough. And his family, I think it's a very unfair thing, what's going on. So we'll see. But I do think this. They've given it a lot of time. They will continue to give it a lot of time. And really, it's up to the Senate. And I really rely on them. I think they're going to do a good job.
So we'll wait to see if she testifies on Monday. If not, will the Senate move on with a vote on the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh? The president pretty confident of the process, and, you know, rightfully so. Things are moving well for him despite the media opposition. The economy is booming at twice the Obama-era levels because the administration's push to slash regulations, promote pro-growth policies, cut taxes, and, you know what, I'd add a few other things. I think this administration's positive approach to Israel comes with blessings. That's what the Word of God says. Well, with us now is Ken Blackwell, Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance here at the Family Research Council. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Good to be with you, sir.
All right. So what happens here if Dr. Ford does not show up on Monday as invited to testify? Does the Senate move on with a confirmation hearing?
I think so, Tony. The proverbial jig is up. Reasonableness is a two-way street. When it is not, someone is being played for a chump. Senator Grassley has been reasonable. Senator Feinstein and her colleagues have not been. Senator Grassley has said enough is enough. We've, in fact, tried to look at this every which way, up and down, left to right, and to give you opportunity to speak and to state your case. And if you pass on those opportunities, we're going to move forward. The president has done an excellent job in vetting candidates and offering this splendid jurist. And I think the FBI and all the other investigators and the staff have really scrubbed this guy, and he's ready. He's clean. He's good. He's smart. And the court needs his brain power and his jurisprudence and his philosophy, which basically says that the court is not an extraordinary legislative body.
So it would appear that since the invitation's been granted to her to come and testify, a vote was postponed from last Thursday, or rather from this Thursday, was they postponed the vote, waiting to give her the opportunity to speak. Is this just an effort to run out the clock? I mean, what do we see unfolding here on the Democratic side?
It's an effort to not only run out the clock, it's an effort to gin up their base. As I've said in talking with you on a number of occasions, people aren't motivated by their comfort. And so the fact that job numbers are up, incomes are up, the stock market is galloping along, that really does meet a lot of people's comfort index. But in politics today, people are motivated, you know, by their concerns. And so as we move forward, we're going to have to make sure that our base understands this is about not being able to practice their faith in the public square if the reins of governance change its hands. You know, this means open borders and drugs and criminals having a direct line to our neighborhoods. This is about, you know, the total collapse and dysfunctionality of Obamacare and the need for us to be on another track. We have to frame this for what it is. These folks want a active court. They want to stop the march of originalists and constitutionalists on the bench that will keep a rein on the power and reach of government, because they understand what their job is, and when they do their job correctly, it optimizes, you know, liberty in the public square.
Ken Blackwell, let's talk just a moment. I ask you a question. You made reference to the economy, jobless numbers at a 49-year low. The economy is humming at a pretty good pace. What do you attribute that to?
You nailed it. The fact that the president understands that capital, actually does look for the greatest freedom and opportunity. And so what he did was he came in with a regime of tax cuts, additional tax cuts, and regulation scale backs. And he's created an environment for capital investment to take place in this country. And so that's why the stock market is galloping. That's why businesses are not taking their jobs elsewhere, but creating job opportunities for Americans right here. This president understands what it means to create an opportunity society in the United States, not in some faraway countries.
So, Ken Blackwell, no threat that James Carville is going to be out there running around Democrats saying it's the economy, stupid?
No, he sure won't. He, in fact, and all of those on the left will use every scare tactic, every just underhanded method that they can come up with to stop this president's forward movement, because they understand that if we come out and we keep the Senate in the hands of the Republicans, pick up a seat, 2, 3, or 4, and keep the majority of the House, this president's next 2 years will actually put us on a course that none of the shenanigans can turn around.
All right. Ken Blackwell, as always, great to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony. All the best. See you tomorrow.
All right. Ken Blackwell, another Values Voter Summit attendee. He'll be here with us tomorrow. Hope you will as well. All right. I mentioned we had a special gathering at the White House today, a summit, a working meeting with leaders, business leaders from across the country to discuss the issue of the persecution, religious persecution that's taking place around the globe. The vice president came in. John Bolton, National Security Advisor to the President, was there, and Ambassador Sam Brownback, who we'll talk to in a moment. But Vice President for Public Policy was with us, Travis Weber. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
First of its kind for us, and quite significant that the White House, this administration, putting so much focus and energy on religious liberty.
Yeah, I mean, this is really good to see. We heard a lot about what's been done this morning, and there's a lot of opportunity for us as Americans to carry the ball down the field on this issue. We heard about, we all know the case of Andrew Brunson pretty well. Concrete measures in that case, sanctions being placed on two high-level Turkish officials, certainly got Turkey to the table, understanding this is a serious matter. And as Ambassador Bolton pointed out, this was to a NATO ally. This is
first
not
time
usual.
Ever.
First time ever. We need to continue this type of thing, put other countries on notice. And I think we have some friends in the administration on this point, fighting for religious freedom worldwide for everyone, and we need to move that ball down the field.
Has religious freedom, and we're talking about, you know, global, international religious freedom, I'm not just talking about here in the United States, we're talking about in our foreign policy. Have we ever seen an administration so focused on religious liberty?
Certainly not in the type of steps and measures that we see being taken recently under the Trump administration, confronting the Nigerian president openly on the killings of Christians in that country, the sanctions on a NATO ally over a religious freedom issue, which law allows us to do, but you often have pressure from others in the government for various reasons wanting to not impose sanctions on the religious freedom issue, right? So prioritizing that issue, very important. And we've had, you know, President Reagan, fought for this issue internationally, but we have good steps being taken now. We need to continue to really move the ball down the field on this issue. And President Trump has done a great job, and we need to continue to carry that forward and use the authority we have in the law to advocate for this issue, both in terms of specific steps like sanctions on violators, other violators like India and China and a host of others, and cultivating the conditions long-term for the issue.
Travis, the vice president spoke to those gathered. What were your takeaways from what the vice president had to say?
Yeah, I mean, it struck me that he's very much in tune with what's going on. I mean, he talked about the case of Christians in Nicaragua being harassed by government forces, violently harassed, for peacefully exercising their faith and trying to stand up exercising their faith in the public square for peace and justice in that country. So the fact that, you know, the vice president comes, addresses this issue, shows that they're keen on it, and we need to rally behind them and let the administration know that we have we're standing by, ready to help and support them in their efforts on this issue. They need to know that Americans are behind them on religious freedom, and they need to understand that.
Very quickly, we're up against the break, but John Bolton, National Security Advisor, which advises on national security, religious liberty factors in very prominently in his view of the landscape of the world.
It's connected to security and economic growth worldwide, and this is important evidence to tell a story about.
All right, Travis Weber, great to have you on.
Thanks so
Tony. Much. All right, folks, don't go away when we come back. Ambassador Large for Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, was a part of our gathering today at the White House, just returning from Uzbekistan after being out on the road working for religious freedom. He joins us next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come in just a moment.
Are we moving in the right direction? If you're like me, you care a lot about where our country is headed. With so much at stake in America, do our leaders have a way forward? To find out, mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans that want to preserve and protect religious freedom, family values, and the sanctity of human life. Invited and confirmed speakers include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Sam Brownback, Ben Carson, Kellyanne Conway, Mike Pompeo, Laura Ingraham, Oliver North, Dana Lash, Sean Hannity, Joel Rosenberg, Todd Starnes, and Mark Levin. Meet values voters like yourself that share a Christian worldview on issues. Through the main events, networking in the exhibit hall, breakouts, movie premieres, and meet and greets with our speakers. On September 21st to 23rd, be a part of the movement to pray, vote, and stand for the sake of America. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon, the eve of the Values Voter Summit. If you're on your way, looking forward to seeing you. If you're not going to be able to make it, you can watch online. Go to TonyPerkins.com, get all the details of how you can still participate in this year's Values Voter Summit. All right, as I mentioned earlier today, the Family Research Council, along with United in Purpose, hosted a working summit at the White House to discuss the issue of religious persecution internationally and what can be done about it. The vice president there, the national security advisor to the president, John Bolton, was there, and also Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, just having returned from an international trip on religious freedom, joined us today, and he joins us now. Sam Brownback. Ambassador, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony. Appreciate it. That was an excellent meeting today there at the White House. And the Vice President and John Bolton really couldn't have been clearer, more knowledgeable, or stronger on the back end of this topic. They were great.
It's got to encourage you in your role to know that you're not carrying this load by yourself. You've got the administration from, you've got the Secretary of State, you've got the Vice President, you've got the President. I mean, there's an entire team in the administration, the Trump administration, that cares about this issue.
It not only makes my job easier, it lets us get things done. I just got back from Uzbekistan, Ukraine, and Poland. Three countries and met with the foreign secretary in each country and presidents of two of the countries. President of Uzbekistan committing to open up to religious freedom. The president of the Ukraine, they've got a big religious freedom issue going on there. The Poles willing to join us because it's not just me. It's not me saying, hey, you guys ought to do this. It's them looking and reading all the tea leaves saying, wow, this is really important to the Trump administration. If we want good relations with the U.S., and by the way, we think this is an important topic, we should get on board, and they do. It's enormously helpful to the cause.
What have you seen since the ministerial took place a month or so ago, where you had 82 different countries gathered here based on the call from the Secretary of State to focus on the advancement of religious freedom? Are pieces beginning to fall in place internationally now?
They are. I just met with the Mongolian foreign minister. They're going to call together a group on religious freedom in their area. We're talking with a number of different countries about doing regional religious freedom summits. And people are starting really to get the idea that this is a basic human right, and you get this one right, and a lot of other things improve and get better. And one that we're pushing hard with people is if you want to grow your economy, it's important that you have religious freedom, because it really invites an open society. And that's a good part of the reason the Uzbeks are interested in doing this and moving forward with it. So, yes, we are seeing pieces move into place, and it really is because the administration from the very top on down is very strong on this topic.
Ambassador, there was some discussion today that, you know, the administration all in, you know, the Congress is favorable, but there's still work to be done. What's the role of the outside groups, you know, churches, nonprofits? What's their role in this issue of religious freedom?
You know, I think they need to keep promoting it as one of their roles. And then one of the things I hope churches would start doing is picking out a country that they want to support for religious freedom. And there's plenty of them where there's a lot of religious persecution. And then just get really engaged, invite people over from that country or activists that focus on that particular country to speak, then send people over to that nation and see what they can do to help out. We've got individual churches in the United States that are help rebuilding Christian communities in northern Iraq with their donations. It cost about $2,500 there to renovate a house that was destroyed by ISIS. It's enormously helpful to allow people to be able to then stay in their home country instead of what has typically happened in the past. Everybody just leaves the nation because of the persecution. But we can help rebuild, and people are moving back.
And that's not only is that, I mean, nice that they can stay in their home. It's a stabilizing force by having the presence, in this case, the other religious minorities. That has a stabilizing effect upon the entire country.
Oh, it does, Tony. It's just enormously important for that nation to be able to have that taking place. The diversity and then the having a society that can get along with a diverse population is we take it for granted, even though we have our difficulties, no question here. But in a lot of places, this is a new idea, and this is an important one for them to start getting right if they're going to have a diverse, growing nation.
Another item that was, and we're almost out of time, but the connecting this issue of religious freedom to our trade policy, that, you know, if we're going to do business with countries, then they need to come in line with certain things. If they want favorable status with us economically, they need to begin respecting these fundamental human rights, such as religious freedom.
Yes, that would be, I think, an important one to start emphasizing to people. Now, that's not stated policy in the United States. We generally treat trade issues as trade issues and other issues along the line. But what we're starting to see this administration do, and they are doing it, is taking serious religious freedom, like what they've done with the Andrew Brunson case, and putting sanctions on Turkey if they won't let him go. That's good.
And John Bolton spoke extensively about that. Ambassador, I want to thank you for joining us today at the summit, and I want to thank you for joining us here this afternoon on Washington Watch. And I know you will be at the Values Voter Summit this weekend, honoring Congressman Frank Wolf of Virginia, this year's recipient of our leadership award for his leadership on this issue of religious freedom.
Yes, I will be there, and I'm looking forward to it. I love Frank Wolf. He's such a great American, and he's the guy that really launched this cause, and I want to be there to honor him.
All right. Ambassador Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback. We'll be seeing him more this weekend. Hope to see you there as well. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch to come. Bob Fu, the founder of China Aid, a native of China, is here to talk about what's happening in that country. Don't go away.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen. Sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for his kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, as we've been discussing here in the last couple of segments, we, the Family Research Council, that is, had a briefing at the White House. We hosted it. The Vice President came in, John Bolton, National Security Advisor to the President, and we just heard from Ambassador Large, Sam Brownback. One of our other guests that was a part of a panel discussion that we had later at lunch, Pastor Bob Fu. He is the founder and president of China Aid, an international nonprofit Christian human rights organization committed to promoting religious freedom and the rule of law in China. He was born in China, raised in mainland China, imprisoned for evangelizing, was able to seek asylum here in the United States, and has been advocating for Christians in China, and he joins us now. Bob, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony, for having me. Thank you for your leadership on this important issue.
Well, Bob, China is back in the news, and not for good reasons. We're seeing really a historic rise in Christian persecution, and not just Christians, other religious minorities being persecuted there in China. Describe a little bit to our listeners what's happening right now.
What's happening, Tony, right now in China is the worst religious persecution since the beginning of the Cultural Revolution by Chairman Mao in the 1960s. We have seen the Chinese regime start even burning Bibles and destroying thousands of crosses from the rooftop of church buildings, and even confiscated books and accusing the Christians for sending their children to believe in Christ. And we have also seen that all these the new regulation prescribed no religious trainings is allowed to go to overseas. We have also seen that the Chinese government banning any children
from under 18 years old to receive any religious belief or even a education on religion. So this is
that's even attending a state recognized church, right?
That's right. Even many of the measures are taken in the government sanctioned churches, and you have the state sanctioned churches in their in the name of so-called sanitization, means like to be more like Chinese, you know, to make Christianity compatible with socialism. The church choir is required to sing the revolutionary communist songs before they are allowed to sing the praising God songs. And even inside the church, if you have a cross, on both sides of the cross, many churches were mandated to hold the portrait of Chairman Mao and Chairman Xi of the Communist Party instead. So these are still unfolding. You have seen these extreme measures. And of course, the persecution, as you said, against the other religious minorities, like the Tibetan Buddhists, like the Uyghur Muslims, as many as over a million Uyghur Muslims and their children are also being held in the Chinese so-called study camp, the so-called the mind transformation camp, which is another form of gulag.
So, Bob, what is giving rise to this new wave of persecution in China?
I think the main reason is the insecurity of the Communist Party and President Xi Jinping. This is a personal feature that he's very afraid the growth of Christianity will pose an existential threat to the ruling of the Communist Party. And on the other hand, of course, we should be as Christians, we should be glad to see that it seems the rapid growth of Christian faith is phenomenal. And, from 1 million Christians when the Communist Party took power in the 1950s, to now, according to the most conservative estimate, the number has reached to over 100 million. So the Chinese Communist Party is very afraid. And of course, the Christians are the best citizens. They are the ones who always care the elderly, the poor, and the needy, and the children. And yet the Communist Party look at them as the national security threat, and put them under severe persecution as we are talking.
Well, that's amazing. 100 million Christians in China, and the number is growing. Bob Fu, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. Great to have you at the summit earlier today, and I know you're going to be at the Values Voter Summit as well, so we want to thank you for all that you do on behalf of not just the Chinese Christians and religious minorities, but just bringing awareness to religious persecution in general. So thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tony.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to be taking your phone calls here on this Thursday afternoon. Yes, your phone calls, 866-372-7234. When we return, don't go away. Washington Watch returns after this.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
Are we moving in the right direction? If you're like me, you care a lot about where our country is headed. With so much at stake in America, do our leaders have a way forward? To find out, mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans that want to preserve and protect religious freedom, family values, and the sanctity of human life. Invited and confirmed speakers include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Sam Brownback, Ben Carson, Kellyanne Conway, Mike Pompeo, Laura Ingraham, Oliver North, Dana Lash, Sean Hannity, Joel Rosenberg, Todd Starnes, and Mark Levin. Meet Values voters like yourself that share a Christian worldview on issues. Through the main events, networking in the exhibit hall, breakouts, movie premieres, and meet and greets with our speakers. On September 21st to 23rd, be a part of the movement to pray, vote, and stand for the sake of America. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, here's what we want to talk about. I'll take your other calls. We've got some calls already lined up here. But here's I'm going to go back to our very first topic, and that's the topic of Brett Kavanaugh. The vote was actually supposed to take place today in committee, which was delayed from last week because the Democrats were able to kind of take these procedural delays, which pushed it a week, which would have been today. The chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Charles Grassley, after this letter was made public, after being set on for 6 weeks, made public Monday, he delayed the vote and has now invited Dr. Ford to come and speak on Monday. Now, here's the question I have. She's saying that she'll come and testify. She's open to testifying, but not Monday. She says that she's just that just doesn't work for her. That they're in fact, let me to quote from her attorneys. Testifying Monday, however, is not possible, and the committee's insistence that it occur then is arbitrary in any event. This was according to Ford's lawyers. Really, it's not arbitrary. They have a process. They've been trying to seat a justice prior to the start of the next session, term of the court, and they're giving time. So here's the question. Do you think that if Dr. Ford does not come forth and testify next week as offered the opportunity, should the Senate move on? Should the Senate move on with the confirmation process, vote in the committee, and then on to the Senate floor? Or should they just wait until Dr. Ford's ready to come and testify? So what do you think? This is a real question because this is something they're struggling with. It's been talked about in the press. And it was interesting. I was talking to a New York Times reporter, called me, and wanted to know, you know, how do evangelicals, how do social conservatives think about this? Do they think the administration should move on? Should they wait? You know, how should they handle this? So I'm putting the question before you. What do you think? 866-372-7234. And let's go to the phones. We're going to go to Baton Rouge, where Daniel is on the line. Daniel, welcome to Washington Watch.
How you doing, Reverend Perkins? Thanks for taking my call.
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing fine, thank you. My question is, I understand that they do need to, you know, vet the person, you know, a nominee, and they need to ask questions and go through all this to make sure that he's qualified for the job. But, I mean, no one's perfect, and I'm not trying to justify any wrongdoing, but how do they draw the line between, you know, if you did something in the past? Is it, how far back do they look in your past? I mean, otherwise, no one would be could possibly serve on the Supreme Court, you know.
Daniel, that is actually a good question. One that people have kind of batted around is, you know, what's the limit? How far can you go back? Can you go back to preschool? Can you go back to when they were in, stealing toys from each other in kindergarten? I mean, you know, where do you draw the line? And at what point does someone have a change? Can they change? Can they have a past but yet have a present? Daniel, I think it's a great question. But here is the president, and actually the president's very calm about this and has said, all right, we're going to let the Senate handle it. And I think Grassley's actually done a really good job on this, pushed the pause button, said, okay, you know, in this hashtag MeToo world, We're going to give complete opportunity for this woman to come forward and state her allegations. Now, in this environment, though, someone we've seen it, you're guilty until you can prove your innocence, and that's almost impossible to do. But I go back again to the timing of this. Okay, Dianne Feinstein sat on this for 6 weeks. She met with Judge Kavanaugh, did not bring it up in the meeting, the personal private meeting, did not share it with other members of the committee, did not bring it up in the private hearing, the confidential hearing that the senators had, the committee had with Kavanaugh, did not bring it up in the public hearing, waited until the eve of the vote, essentially, and then released it. Just makes it extremely suspect. So out of abundance of caution and due process, they say, okay, we're going to give this lady an opportunity to come and speak. But now she's saying, well, I'll speak, but just I don't know that I can do it on Monday. How far should they go? If she doesn't show up, should they proceed and have a vote? All right, let's go to Michael in Dallas. Michael, welcome to Washington Watch.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. I really am just baffled by the Republicans' position of not moving forward. If she refuses to testify, I mean, she's had 30-plus years to come forward with these claims, and we've got a sitting senator that had the information and, from my point of view, is just a working-class citizen. This is nothing more than Democratic grandstanding, trying to use anything they can to sabotage the process.
Well, Michael, that's what I want to hear from you, and I want your perspective because that's what I think the senators need to hear, not from the media, but from folks like you said, the working
yes,
folks
sir.
Of this country. Michael, thanks so much for being a longtime listener, and thanks for that first time call. Let's go. Let's jump over to Mississippi, and let's talk to Anthony. Anthony, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller, but I am of the thought process. The Senate has given her the opportunity to come on Monday, speak openly or privately, however she wants to do it. But to delay this is just another Democratic tactic, And I believe that the Senate committee should just press right on with the voting process to confirm Judge Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. And as the previous caller said, she's had 30-some years. And my logical mind tells me if that would have happened to my daughter, one, I would have been able to see it based on how she acted in the home. And I would have pulled that information out as a parent and taken the appropriate action to resolve the issue then. But I also think it's a hidden agenda because of her parents losing a case with Brett's mother as a judge. So I'm quite sure the Democrats know this, but their little 11th hour shenanigans is full of holes in it and smoke. So I'm going to get off the line and hear what you got to say.
All right, Anthony, thanks so much for the call. That's actually it's something I hadn't thought about. It's actually very interesting about if that were your daughter and something like this would have occurred, how would, you know, it would have been dealt with back then and action taken. That's quite interesting. I wonder if anything was done back then. I wonder if her parents did anything, if she told anyone or if she just, you know, all of a sudden it just came out in recently. That's really interesting, Anthony. All right, let's go on to let's go to Dallas, back to Texas, and let's talk to Sherry. Sherry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I enjoy your program. I'll ask my question, then I'll get off the line and hear your comments. Thank you. I was just wondering, since when does a person get to decide that they don't want to come to a hearing and there's no real reason to why? It's very ambiguous, and I think we need to call our bluff and just go forward with it. There should be more concern about what's best for our nation and getting a Supreme Court justice down the court. So thank you for taking my call.
All right, Sherry, thanks for calling in. Again, well, the process has been delayed. This is pretty unique. Now, you go back to Clarence Thomas, and there are some parallels, but not many. They've delayed the process. They've extended an invitation. And if she doesn't come, you know, how long do you wait? So I think, quite frankly, that the Republicans have been extremely accommodating in the process to allow her to come. And she's had, enough time. I mean, this is something such significance. You've got something scheduled next Monday. Well, I mean, I think with the whole country on hold, you could, if it's really important, you can rearrange your schedule. Good call. All right, let's go. Well, a lot of folks from Texas today. I'm going to try to work in one from Missouri, though. Let's go to Eric in Missouri. Eric, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I just wanted to say that, the Democrats, I've been a Democrat I'm 50 years old, been a Democrat ever since I started paying attention to politics. And until for probably about the last 4 to 5 years, the things they've been doing, I mean, they're basically just a strong liberal party now, and they've really destroyed what used to be a good party.
So let me ask you, what do you think the Republicans should – oh, you're a Republican. Okay. Well, let me ask you this. What do you think Republicans should do in this case?
Well, you know, I think they ought to – you know, I don't know what they can do. I really can't say ignore the woman, because you know I know they have to be careful about what they do, but like this previous callers have said, you know, these things always come up, you know, like the Cosby deal. 30 years later, when you know somebody has become something, then all of a sudden they stand up. You know, is it real? I mean, you've got to that's a very valid question.
Mm-hmm. You do think that something would have come up before. I mean,
I know they want to say that, women, and I understand that, you know, nobody wants to put that out there, but why is it just because he's going to become somebody very important now that it comes up?
Yeah. Well, and I think part of the Eric, I think part of what the Republicans are being very cautious about, and this I agree with, that, you know, this the issue of sexual harassment, sexual assault,
sure,
needs to be dealt with in a very serious and sensitive way, and not brushed aside as it has in the past.
Sure,
but we need to pursue what is just, and not just assume everybody's guilty on every allegation that's made.
Right, and I've listened to the Democrats on the news. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought there, Eric.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was listening to Democrats on the news, and they've been really, you know, just they've already got him tried and convicted in their minds, you know. And I don't think it's fair, you know.
That, you're right. Eric, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening and calling in. Let's go back to Texas, where Michael is on the line. Michael, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Good afternoon, and thanks for taking my call. God bless your ministry on the radio and A Search for Truth. I can't help but agree with all of the callers so far. And one thing that I think we ought to consider is the Democrats' stance on all issues for the last how many years. Truth has not been a real high set point for them, and as the last caller said, and you said, Judge Kavanaugh has already been tried and convicted. So I think Republicans, yes, they've already showed that they're being careful and they're listening and all of that, but I think sometimes the party is a little too easy. The Democrats certainly wouldn't have a problem, you know, forcing the issue. And I think the Republicans need to get a little of the same. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, Michael, I don't think you're alone in that. I think a lot of folks think the Republicans are a little too timid and need to be a little more aggressive in pursuing their policies and their values. I would say I think that they have I commend Senator Grassley, as I said a moment ago. I think he's approached this in the right way. I don't think you want to be dismissive of this, because there are a lot of folks in the research that we do, the issue of sexual abuse and assault is far more prevalent than people would like to acknowledge. And, you know, I think we've got to be sensitive to that and certainly encourage people to get the help that's out there. We don't want any way be dismissive, and I don't think the Republicans are doing that. I do think they've got to move on if she will not come forward and testify. All right, sorry we didn't get to the rest of the calls. We're out of time for today, but I'll be back again tomorrow live from the Values Voters Summit, so I hope you'll join us. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.